Welcome to a bonus episode of the Weed Week podcast. You can catch up with us on Instagram and Twitter at Weed Week News. Sign up for our newsletters at weedweek.net. I'm Alex Halperin.
And I'm Donnell Alexander. And this is a special episode of the Weed Week podcast. On Monday, we'll be right back in your newsfeed.
So today we've got a really fun conversation with Lizzie Post, who is the great-great-granddaughter of Emily Post, who was the doyenne of American manners for the last century. And Lizzie Post has just written a book on cannabis manners called Higher Etiquette.
Yeah, it's a very special bonus podcast episode, and I think it'll change the way you feel about etiquette and manners. I think it's really new. Didn't you feel affected that way?
Yeah, because, you know, etiquette sort of has a stuffy reputation, I think. People think, oh, it's like, what's the right way to eat asparagus and stuff like that. And it's really not, I mean, maybe that's some of it, but it's also about making people around you feel comfortable and by extension, making yourself feel comfortable and confident. And that's hard in the cannabis world, especially now where sort of everything's in flux.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, everything's in flux, but there is one thing she touched on that isn't variable, and that's that scarcity is less of an issue than it used to be. I hadn't really thought about how that plays a role in manners and etiquette, but yeah, we don't have to act like there's not going to be anymore, and that's interesting.
I mean, that just changes the way, it really changes your mentality about just behavior and with regard to cannabis.
Yeah, and I guess I just think it's especially interesting because it's not static. You know, we don't feel the same way about pot that we necessarily did 18 months ago, and that's super interesting. It didn't have a whole bunch of changes for decades, you know? Yeah.
So anyway, it's a lot of fun. Here's Lizzie Post.
Enjoy.
Lizzie Post, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I really enjoyed going through the book. What made you think that the world needs a cannabis etiquette book?
Well, a couple different things made this book come about. One was being a longtime cannabis consumer and being an etiquette expert in the rest of my job. You know, even in college, when I was writing my first book, people were immediately like, you've got to write a book on weed etiquette. and it was, you know, something that my cousin and I had always discussed. And he was the one who was really positive about the fact that, you know, hey, legalization is coming. This will be a thing. He was convinced that we would write about later. And then sure enough, legalization started to happen state by state. And I was sitting in the office alone one day and I got an email that said, hey, I've got a publisher looking to write a book on cannabis and etiquette. And I'm not sure it's for your brand, but do you know anyone who's a particularly conscientious pot smoker? And I was like, raised my hand at my desk to nobody and was like, this is my dream come true. Something I was really grateful for was that 10 Speed wanted to do this book in a way that really honored the cannabis community. You know, cannabis etiquette has been around for a long time. This is in no way a prescription handed down from the Emily Post Institute. This is our chance to really explore and celebrate a culture.
Hey, I want to interrupt you at this point because you mentioned Emily Post. Not everyone's familiar with who she was and what that name means. So could you tell us a little bit about Emily?
Sure. So Emily Post, for me, she was my great-great-grandmother, and she was alive from about the early 1870s to the 1960, I believe she passed away. And she was America's go-to source for etiquette advice and has been ever since. Our family's brand carried on the tradition of her work and the legacy of her work throughout our generations. I'm the fifth generation to run the Emily Post Institute. And what I really love is that Emily herself really based her etiquette advice on the idea of having good manner, not necessarily great manners. And the difference between those two are really rooted in treating people well, being aware of the people around you. It has nothing to do with money. It has nothing to do with class. It has nothing to do with being fancy. It has to do with looking around at how you are impacting the people around you. Emily herself said that whenever two people come together and their behavior affects one another, you have etiquette. That's pretty broad. That means that you find etiquette in all communities and in all interactions, from opening a door for someone and holding it for them to, you know, merging two families or doing giant business deals. So it really is kind of everywhere and for everyone. And that's something I'm really, really proud of when it comes to our family's business and legacy.
You know, I have to admit that I'm not a big fan of etiquette. I think of myself as an inherently polite person, but I like punk rock and transgression and these things. So I just had a hard time warming up to the book. And I thought about, I actually, when I read about it, I was thinking that you're redefining what this is for a generation. Am I not? Do you feel like Emily would have approved of this book?
Well, Emily definitely would have approved of this book, but I would say that mostly the idea is to get people to understand that our etiquette has always been based in consideration, respect, and honesty. Those are the three principles that we use to form our advice when we're looking at new situations. And the past 20 years have brought us a lot of new situations to consider, from the ubiquitous use of cell phones through social media, towards really accepting, well, I shouldn't say accepting, but really including a lot of different voices. We were talking about same-sex marriages long before they were legal. And I really like the fact that when you look at etiquette through this lens of consideration, respect, and honesty, it becomes something that's inclusive rather than something which I think a lot of people associate it with, which is exclusion and kind of this secret world of here are the things you should know and what they mean and decode it all. It's like, I love the fact that Emily was never really about that. And
it's not about which fork you should use.
Right.
It's about how you interact with other people.
Yeah. Emily used to say it's not about which fork you use. It's that you should just use a fork.
Hey, can I ask about some of the specifics?
Yeah.
I've actually grappled with some of these things, and you talk about etiquette in terms of vaping and smoking, edibles. You talk about dabbing and etiquette. What is that like? What does that mean? I mean, these are all things that are so new. How do you decide what the etiquette is for things like this?
Right? You call people like Will Hyde of Leafly, who is the avid dabber, and you talk to him about the dabbing community that he experiences. You do a lot of research. You do a lot of reaching out to folks. So when I walk into someone's house and I know that they are, you know, real dab happy, and that dabbing is their thing, and that's what they want to share with me, I've got to consider that, first of all, that I'm going to be, you know, hanging out and sessioning with someone who this is their jam. This is what they love. And I want to be respectful about that. I don't want to walk in saying, oh, flower is my only thing. Concentrates are just so, you know, whatever. They're so new age. Like,
so what do you do in a situation like that? How do you handle it?
You try to be open and respectful as best you can. You know, you say, oh, well, you know, tell me about your rig, or how do you like to smoke? Like, do you even call it smoking, or do you call it vaping if you're dabbing? You know, ask questions of people, get them to talk about this thing that's their favorite subject, and then let them lead the way. And if they aren't outright doing that from the get-go, if they aren't kind of playing that host role, then you can kind of encourage them to. You might say, well, yeah, I'd love to take a hit if you want to show me how, you know, or I'd love to take you up on your recommendation, or tell me about, you know, this concentrate that you have so that I know if it's the right thing that I want to be hitting right now. Those kind of things are really important. As the host, it's really great for you to really guide your friend through this experience and to say, you know, like, oh, I'd love to set up a dab for you. I'm pretty particular about my rig, so let me get it ready for you and I'll show you how to take a hit off of it, and then we'll do one for you. Those kinds of things are really helpful, and they make a difference towards letting each person know what is expected of them. And that is what manners are all about. It's about having that confidence and understanding understanding the situations that you walk into and feeling comfortable asking about them if you're unfamiliar with them.
One situation, and this is maybe like a overarching situation regarding sort of legalization and etiquette, involves sort of finding out if somebody is a cannabis user. How has legalization and I guess sort of greater tolerance in a lot of places where maybe it's not legal, how has that changed that conversation?
I feel like it's changed it from slipping in slight references here and there, you know, to actually flat out feeling comfortable asking people. I definitely remember in days of prohibition, like you kind of wondered what you could say to someone to see if they would pick up on what you were throwing down. And now it's a lot more just, I may be a little bit bold just because of the work that I'm in now, but I have no problem asking someone, hey, is it okay if cannabis is a part of tonight? Is it okay for me to bring a joint over? Is it okay? You know, like, do you like weed? I'd love to bring you some of my homegrown. Whatever it is that's the language you like to use, asking someone, I think, is totally fine, especially if it's legal. I don't think it needs to be some kind of hushed conversation, especially when your state and hopefully one day our entire federal government legalizes this for everyone. It should be no different from asking someone if they'd like a glass of wine or a beer, you know, or ask them, you know, what kind of food preferences or food restrictions that they have, that sort of thing.
But it still is a little bit fraught.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, it is. You can definitely put someone on the spot and make them uncomfortable. So one of the things we tell people is try not to ask in front of a large group. Try to give someone a little bit of privacy in their ability to respond just in case someone's not yet comfortable. You know, one of the tough things about this is meeting people where they're at. And understanding that after 100 years of negative programming, stereotyping, and prohibition telling us that this is something bad and, you know, only for the young and dumb, it's really hard sometimes to feel confident admitting that this is something you love. Or it's sometimes really uncomfortable for people who they might not have ever had someone in their life who consumes cannabis consistently, and they're not familiar with what that person might look like and how that person might be a really positive, you know, beneficial person in their life. And so it can make them squeamish. It can make them nervous. I certainly love that moment when I let people know, oh, well, you know, most of the times you've met me, I probably just smoked a joint. And we've had lovely dinner conversations or been on a great date. I like bringing that up, but you do really want to be aware of your surroundings. You want to be aware of giving someone the space and privacy to respond in a way that works for them, especially if we're talking about, you know, at work in a situation where your job is present.
Hey, I have a really practical question. Is there a polite way to tell someone they're smoking way too much of your pot? You know, that's a situation that's pretty real.
I totally know that situation. That's the situation where I'm like, I'm offering it to them. And I'm also saying, you know, I'm going to take these two nuggets out to save them for later for me so that I know I've got enough till I can go meet up with my buddy. Mm-hmm. But the rest we can go to town on, you know, it's like try to section it off before so that you're always protecting your own stash. And then you have whatever you have to be able to offer out. But if they're puffing on that joint, you know, I think the easiest thing to say to someone is just, hey man, you want to pass it back to me maybe?
Are you in New York?
No, I live in Burlington, Vermont.
Oh my goodness. You must see different etiquette there. You're in a place where there's a degree of decriminalization. What do you have there?
Oh, we are fully legal, but what we don't have is a retail system.
That's no good.
Yeah, I know. It's really funky because the thing that I noticed when I went out and did research for this book was that places that had full rec or adult use retail systems in place had a general awareness and a general education level, whether people consumed cannabis or not, that was really impressive. Whereas I find in Vermont right now, and I do know that this will change, people are still a little hush-hush about it. They're still nervous to talk about it with each other. You know, I had a friend tell me that she was at a party, you know, casual party amongst friends, lots of beer, lots of wine, lots of parents drinking around their kids. But when she said she was writing an article on cannabis, somebody shushed her. And that's the kind of thing that breaks my heart, because I really feel that those retail markets tend to bring a much broader awareness to everyone. And they stoke the conversation for everybody a lot more. So our state is moving along at the pace that it is. We are allowed to grow our own, smoke our own, and give our own. And we are allowed to make edibles with our own. So that's just been really fun to get to participate in. I've got my plants going, and I love them. I'm trying to figure out why some of them are growing and some of them aren't. But I am stoked for the day when I can just walk into a store and buy, you know, an array of strains in many different forms and set up my home cannabis bar, you know, to the full effect and really, really get with it.
Can you talk to us a little bit about that home cannabis bar? You wrote a little bit about it in the book, and I think that's really something that people would care about.
So isn't that like the stuff that we all dreamt about like years ago? Like, oh man, I just want to have, like, I want a bar just like an alcohol bar, but it's all weed. I love the idea of being able to offer people different strains, being able to offer people different methods to consume with, because everyone has their different comfort levels. You know, I've got a lot of friends who don't smoke on a regular basis, but when they come to my house, they really want to smoke with me. And so I love being able to provide them with a half CBD, half THC joint or bowl, so that they're getting just something that has a milder effect, but I can puff down on something that works for me, who's a heavy consumer. But I love the idea of keeping papers, pipes, bongs, bubblers, bowls. I mean, it is everything you possibly, I know I just listed like all glass, but keeping like everything that you could possibly want on hand, you know, if you can afford to, because it's fun. It's fun to show people and let them experiment and let them be in their comfort zone. One of the dispensary owners that I worked with for this book said that his mother-in-law really gets down with the patches, and that's like the one form of cannabis, the transdermal patches that she'll use, and she'll slap one on when she goes over to his house, you know? And I love that. I love that there's an option for her that makes her feel comfortable.
I assume that some of this etiquette goes across to the illicit market as well as the dispensary world. Do you know blunts very well?
I am a fan of blunts. I am not a good roller of blunts.
Me neither. But my question is, you know how you have to have a certain degree of spit to make a blunt work?
Yes.
How much spit is too much spit? Would you ever turn away a blunt because it was just too wet?
I would just want it to dry off first, I guess, because this was one of the really funny like moments in the book where I was like, all right, Lizzie, you're writing an etiquette book. How do you talk about spit? Like, how do you talk about slobber and saliva getting on something? And you want it there, but you also don't want it there. Like, and so with a blunt, you really do have to just trust that the person rolling it is going to take care of that. And it will dry off, and that's then, you know, and it'll dry as it burns. But for me, the issue that comes into play with etiquette is less about the person rolling it and creating it for everyone to enjoy, and more about the person who takes that hit, gets the end of the blunt super wet, and then passes it to the next guy. And that's the thing where you just need to be self-aware. And the more that we could talk about things like this openly, and the more that we can, you know, kind of rib our friends a little bit when they do it, more people start to know that's not cool. Like,
but do you say anything? Can you say anything, or you just have to grin and bear it?
I think you kind of have to say, maybe I'll give that a minute before I take a hit. Or, you know, I don't think you can really say to someone, hey, can you wipe that off? It's not full end.
Just wave it in a dramatic gesture.
When it's like, maybe you could try to hold a lighter around it, but not actually burn the end, because then now you've got a double lit end blunt. That's nobody's friend. So there are these little things that become truly problematic, you know. For me, it's when someone just takes the joint, and whether you have a filter or not, they squish the thing down when they're holding it. And I'm like, so that joint's not smokable now.
Are there sort of new faux pas that have emerged with legalization and more access that weren't necessarily problems in the traditional market?
Oh, that's a great question.
Or just faux pas in general. who don't you want to be?
No one has ever wanted to be that person, like bogarting something, letting it just burn and like be wasted consumption. You know, it's one thing if we all have our own personals and we take that however we want. But it's another thing when like people really want that joint or blunt or bowl and it's sitting there smoking, but not being smoked. And that to me is a waste. So that's like, we don't want to be that guy. Like you don't, a guy or girl, you don't want to be that person. And I also think that just like we just mentioned, you don't want to be the slobber person who's like, everyone's like, oh, I'm going to sit on the other side of you, you know?
Absolutely. Scarcity used to be a much more present and sort of...
It was a factor in smoking.
It was much more a theme of the cannabis world and cannabis consumption. And scarcity is now less of a problem. And
totally.
Because access is so much easier. So what does that change?
Okay, this was one that I got firsthand to experience. I remember when I was out in Portland, Oregon, and I was hanging out with my friend Christian, and we, you know, took a joint for a walk, and which you're not supposed to do.
Is that bad etiquette? Because I do that a lot.
I was going to say, I probably shouldn't be admitting to that. But we were out for a walk on totally private property with a joint, and the joint had gone out. And we're walkers and talkers. So, you know, it had been like an hour since this joint had gone out. And I was like, just in my head as I was thinking, oh, we should relight that joint. He tosses it, right? He tosses it into a trash can. And I was just like, what are you doing? Like, that's like, you just got rid of the joint. And he's going, that joint is like hours old at this point. It's going to taste gross. We can roll fresh. And my brain, coming from a place where there isn't just a store around the corner to go get more at, was like not comprehending this at all. And he was just laughing so hard because he's like, you really do come from a state that's like only just barely legalized. I was like, yeah, I do. And I do think that's a reality. That's something that happens. I also think people are probably a lot more willing to lend someone more weed or to just give them more of their own stash.
I feel like there was this thing, I know for a fact, there was a period during the prohibition era where you had to kind of hang out with the dealer and act like you were friends. I never really dug that part of it. And I feel like it was a huge waste of time. It's one of the reasons I love legal weed. But is that something that we're missing? Was it even something that was part of etiquette?
Yeah, no, that was a huge deal. You had to figure out, you had to figure out what language each of your weed people wanted to use over the phone for transactions, whether you're meeting up at their house at some, you know, at a different location, whether they come to drop off for you, whether or not you have to stay and chat and smoke them up with the weed you just bought from them.
Yeah, that was a thing.
That always killed me. I was like, are you kidding me? I gotta smoke you. And like, sometimes you'd be really grateful to do it because it was such good herb, or the person was actually your friend. And other times it just felt kind of like all right.
But that was a kind of etiquette too. But how does something like that get established?
So that gets established just from classic people expressing their feelings about the experiences that they're having with one another. It's about knowing our different preferences. You know, there is no one way to do things, right? I mean, some people are happy with certain situations going one way, and other people would say, boy, that'd be really rude. You know, shoes on, shoes off in a house is a great example. Like, that's, you want to talk about an etiquette debate that will fire people up? Shoes on, shoes off in a house. They will go off for hours on it. Our podcast, Awesome Etiquette, it's a big topic on that show every now and again. And we get a lot of feedback whenever we bring it up. But we're all different. We're all going to have different perspectives. And that type of etiquette, whether or not you stay, whether or not you leave quickly, whether or not you use certain language, all comes from people communicating with one another, communicating their preferences, communicating what they see as an offense, communicating the style of person that they are. And that's really important to us as a society as we figure out what civility is. What is it actually considered? Where are the parameters? How broad does it become? How narrow is it in other areas? We don't know unless we speak up.
I have a question sort of along those lines. I think it'll probably have to be our last question. But this has been so much fun. I've really enjoyed this.
And I could talk to you guys for forever.
Like, the shoes on, shoes off wasn't I don't know if is Ann Landers a sore subject in the post empire?
No, not at all. There's so many etiquette experts out there. There's Miss Manners. There's Letitia Baldridge. There's just tons of people out there, and we love having all those different voices. But what do you think about Ann Landers and shoes on, shoes off?
No. I was just reminded that I think wasn't her most read column ever about like whether to turn the toilet paper roll one way or the other, like which side goes up.
Probably. It's so funny how it's those minor little things that end up being like the biggest, most debated things. I think when I used to write for a website called house.com, I do believe shoes on, shoes off was the one that got like 700 comments or something like that, which was like unheard of.
All right. So here's my last question. It's really sort of about the boundaries of people's personal space and stuff like that. You know, now that it's a lot more common in big cities in the Northeast, say, for people to just walk down the street smoking a joint or smoking a bowl or whatever. And some people don't like the smell.
Yeah.
What do the smokers owe them? Like, who wins?
Yeah.
How does that work out? Because, you know, often you don't know the people. And I mean, you almost never know the people.
Well, first of all, like, legality, we have to lay that out first. You're not allowed to smoke anywhere outside, from what I know. However, let's just say you're kind of in a situation where it's all good. I would be conscious of where that smoke or where those big plumes of vape, if you're getting real cloudy vape off of whatever you're hitting, where they're drifting and where they're going and where am I exhaling? Is there a place I can move to so that it's not drifting over the family behind me? You know what I mean? I think we want to be considering the age of the people around us when possible, especially if people are noticeably minors. And that's not to say that they shouldn't see people smoking cannabis. I do think like exposure in terms of getting people aware, just the same way we see people drinking, it's a thing. But I do think that it is important to be aware of where that smoke is drifting, because no matter what, and as I said before, I'm a huge fan of joints. My joint smoke is going to impact the people around me. And my goal as an individual is to be as considerate and courteous about that as possible. I don't think it means I have to be prevented from smoking, but I do think it does mean that I need to be considerate and aware of how I am impacting the people around me, whether I know them or not.
Where are people going to be able to find you online, and where should they be looking for the book? What are all the things you have happening?
Oh, man, we've got all kinds of fun things happening. In Vermont, there are a ton of events coming up right now. You can check out my event page at higheretiquette.com. And you can also check out my Instagram, which is higher_etiquette. I feel like right now my inbox is very full, and I'm very, very grateful for that. I'm hoping basically for a full round two of book tour.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you very much, Lizzie.
I really appreciate it, guys. And you can find the book at all kinds of online retailers, from indie to the big contributors.
All right. Take care.
Thanks a lot. Take care, guys.
And that's our show for today.
As always, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Weed Week News, or email us at hello@weedweek.net. You can also join our Patreon, and you'll get an extra episode of the Weed Week podcast each month, plus some cool gifts. Check it out at patreon.com/weedweek.
If you would like more news about weed, you can sign up for the Weed Week newsletter, Weed Week California, and the Weed Week Canada newsletter, all available at weedweek.net.
I'm Alex Halpern.
And I'm Donnell Alexander.
Our producers, Hannah Smith and Alicia Beyer, wrote our theme music. Additional music is from the late, great Andre Bush. We'll see you here on Monday.
Peace.
Bye.